Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To good deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Flying solo today, but delighted to welcome along former Motherwell midfielder and ECU Joondalup player assistant manager Stephen McGarry. Stephen, thank you for agreeing to join us today.
No problem at all, mate. Glad to be on.
Well, we'll go right back to the start, and you joined Motherwell in January of 2006, brought to the club by Terry Butcher. You made your debut in a 1-1 draw away to Dunfermline. How did Terry sell you the club, and was it a move that you were quite excited about at the time?
It definitely was, because just to give you a little kind of background in that, how that eventuated, I was up at Ross County at the time. In the beginning of that season, we had John Robertson and Wee Parkey, Wee Donald Park. They were the manager and assistant manager, and we got off to a flyer, and everything was looking great, and the football was good. The team were going well, and it was exciting times up there. But somehow, we Robbo fell out with the chairman, and at some point, I think round about October, he left, and it was just one of those things. I don't know. I still don't know to the day why he left, but he left, and Gardner Spears, who was in charge of the youth at that point, he came in, took over, and George Adams came in as director of football. And over the next couple of months, I kind of sort of found myself kind of on the outer. And at this point, Terry Butcher had a chat with Alex Smith. So Alex Smith was one of my ex-bosses at County as well. So they've got a good relationship, and it was my name popped up. And from that point, basically, I was asked if I could try and get myself away from Ross County. I finalised a settlement to get away from there, and basically I came in with a view to train. We're looking at 6 months contract towards the end of the season. I came in and probably had one of my best weeks of training ever, and when it got to the I think it was a Friday, I was in for the Monday to Friday, and Terry just said, listen, you've done really well and you've settled in with all the boys, and we're going to offer you an 18-month contract. So it's just amazing how things work out. You know, you're on the outer at a first division side, and then a week later, you're getting offered a kind of a chance and to go and play in the Premier League. So it was brilliant, and I'll be forever thankful for Terry for giving me that opportunity.
You continued on and made kind of sporadic appearances between then and the end of the season. Your first goal came in a League Cup game against Partick Thistle the following season, a late winner, and then you also got your first league goal in kind of less glorious circumstances, a 6-1 defeat to Hibs.
That's right, yeah. I think I was chasing around Scotty Brown, Kevin Thompson, and the likes for that game. I think I can remember that game, yeah, we got an absolute doon. But I remember that the Partick goal was ahead. I think it was into extra time. I think they won 3-2 that game. It was I was in and out when Terry first came in. But when when Morris took over the following season, I think I was played most of the games.
It was a frustrating season under Maurice Malpass, and looking back in some of the interviews with the players at the end of the season, quite a lot of the guys seemed to have felt that they'd let the manager down. It was obviously his first venture into first team management, and it didn't really go as planned. In fact, it didn't go at all as planned, I suppose. Was there a kind of feeling of guilt amongst the boys that the performances weren't good enough, and as a result, the results were poor as well?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I can remember I'd done an interview when the season finished, and I can remember saying that we'd let Morris down, and Morris was a good coach and he was a good guy, and we had a decent team. We never had a brilliant team, but we had a decent team, and I think we definitely underachieved that year. You know, we'd some good players, and I can always remember, I think halfway through the season we were ticking along okay. I think we're mid table with no threat of relegation and no threat of anything being unsettled, and I think after the turn of the year we sort of kind of everything was like a downward spiral, and it came to a point where we didn't win. I think we get beat away from Fairmont, and then we couldn't win a game for quite a period of time, and it came down to, I think, the second last game of the season. We're 2-0 up against St Mirren at home. They didn't look scoring until Big Con Meldrum let one go through his legs, and then that sort of kind of changed the game, and they brought on Big Billy Metton and Big Sutty, and they managed to cause mayhem and score a couple of goals, but I think the other result went in our favour. But I think if the other result didn't go in our favour, it was all going to come down to the last game of the season, and if I'm right to remember, I think we might have been up at Tannadice, and that was going to be a tough game to go and try and win. I think, obviously, with the pressure being off, I think that game ended up in being 0-0. But I think it could have been all different circumstances if the pressure was on and then everything was riding on us to get that result. But as you said, I think the feeling throughout the squad, there was, you know, on behalf of the players, I think we felt we let Morris down.
Is it difficult when you'd been there for 5 or 6 months and Terry moves on, then Morris comes in and within a year he's gone as well? So are you constantly kept on your toes and perhaps worrying about your future when it feels like almost at every turn you're having to impress a new manager?
Yeah, but I think I've been in football long enough, and you've probably interviewed several players, or plenty of players who have had not just 5, 6, 7 managers, who've had 10, 15... 20 managers. It's football's crazy these days, you know. It's you don't find managers in too long a position unless there is a lot of success, and even with success brings managers moving on as well. So it was unsettling, but I think the likes of myself, I at that point I was glad I was getting another opportunity. But I think leading into obviously the next stage of Motherwell with Martin McGee coming in, you know, he sort of kind of gave everything and gave everyone a new lease of life.
Yeah, it was a hell of a transformation. Guys like, we've had Jim Patterson on previously, and he was like a different man after that summer in Austria, and that's the rest. Just the football that was played that season was spectacular, and it was exemplified in the first game of the season. Your goal against St Mirren for the 1-0 win. It was a great finish, great celebrations after it as well. Obviously, being a Paisley boy yourself, it must have been a special moment. Was there a bit of family tension after that goal?
Yes. So, do you know what? I've had so many St Mirren fans absolutely hammer me after that, said I was away kissing the badge and everything. I didn't go that far, but I went mental. I went crazy because, you know, I'd been at Motherwell a couple of years. I'd had a couple of rough seasons, and that whole pre-season, so I just gave everyone a real lift. We brought in some good players, you know, big Chrissy Porter, and then we got Hammy back. I think later on this season we got Simon Lattman on. So there's a few, Stevie Hughes came in as well. So he brought in a few good players, and you know, the likes of, like you mentioned, Jim Parters, myself, and I've read it, and fans have mentioned it. You know, Mark McGee changed us from average, very average Premier League players to good Premier League players. Well, that's debatable. That's for other people probably to say. But he changed the way that I looked at football. You know, I was going through a period where I was probably just playing and getting by and happy to be rewarded. But then I wanted to kick on. The team wanted to kick on. He was creating an environment where he made you want to better yourself. He made you want to do everything and for the team. You know, and I don't think a lot of Millwall fans. You know, I think. To look back and when Mark McGee was at Motherwell, obviously at the course of the two times he was there, but you know, I think they've got a lot of bad and ill feeling towards him. But I've got nothing but the highest regard for him. I think he was he changed the club at a period where, you know, it was stale for a long period of time, and he injected that enthusiasm in that football. We changed the style of play. We went from a 4-4-2 to a 4-3-3, really attacking. You know, the likes of wee Roscoe, Ross McCormick and Clarke up top with Chris Report, how dynamic a front line is that, you know. So it really changed the whole club, I think, in that period.
Yeah, absolutely. And another game that I wanted to talk about was the 3-0 game against Aberdeen, where I've never really seen a first half like it, to be honest. At first part, Aberdeen were blown away. It was 3-0 at half time. And Aberdeen were lucky to get nothing. It was you got a goal in that game, but the football that was played, just again, it was just such an example of the confidence that was instilled in the team, and the quality of the football was up there with some of the best Scottish football that I've ever seen, to be perfectly honest. There was the Motherwell team in 1994-95 with the likes of Rob McKinnon and Paul Lambert and Tommy Coyne was a fantastic team, but this was right up there. It was incredible to watch, and it was breeding really good results as well.
Yeah, well, I do remember that game because I scored, and I don't score too many, so I definitely remember that game. And it was a blitz. It was three going on about five or six, and like you said, that some of the games we played and some of the football we played was brilliant, and you seen that with the fans, you know, from it felt like a new era because it was. It felt dark and stale under Morris, and that's nothing against Morris. Like I said, that was partially to do or a lot to do with the players and who underachieved. But there was something really fresh and something really exciting that was happening, and the fans absolutely loved it. You know, and for me, that was one of the most special times in my career. The football and the football we played. You know, against some very good teams, Aberdeen, Celtic and Rangers, we compete against all these teams in Hearts as well. So it was a special time.
There's obviously tinged with major tragedy, the passing of the foul rocked the club to its foundations. Obviously, his teammates, his family and friends, it must have been a horrendous time for you guys trying to pick yourself up and concentrate in football, which was put into perspective big time by the events on the 29th of December. The aftermath, I thought Mark McGee was utterly class throughout it, to be perfectly honest, and I would say that that's the reason that quite a few Motherwell fans were perhaps a wee bit surprised by the negative reaction to Mark coming back to the football club. It was clearly a difficult time, but you think back to the Hearts game and the first game back, the Scottish Cup game, 2-0 down and out the game. Really, it was, we talk about all the good performances that season. For the first hour, Motherwell weren't at the races, and it was completely understandable as to why, but something just clicked in, the emotion of the occasion. I don't know what it was, but it was a really memorable game, and the comeback was spectacular.
Yeah, and that again, and from, I think that's what we still, a lot of the guys from that team were still pretty close, and I think obviously that was one of the main factors. We've always kind of kept a close bond, and we all keep in touch with each other. Obviously, due to the circumstances with Phil and affected everyone, because Phil was one of those guys who, when I first arrived, he was a club captain, but he was just, he would do everything for you, you know, and I'm sure you've come across him many times, and he was just a likeable guy, and he led by example, and not just on the field, but like off the field as well. He was such a genuine character, and I think, and that's why a lot of the guys do hold that special bond. And going on to that Hearts game, to try and play a game of football after the circumstances, I think it was one hell of a way to sort of kind of fight and come back. And we filled that the full end of the way stand, and the banner get brought out as well, and it was unbelievable. And to come back from 2-0 down and totally out the game to scoring two late goals, it was I think everyone will remember that moment. So it was nice that we could do that, sort of kind of being the first game back after Phil passed away.
Do you think that was a real driving force in securing UEFA Cup, as it was at that time, qualification as well? There was half the job had been done when Phil was playing a pivotal role in the team. Was it a bit of a kind of a motivating factor to push on and secure UEFA Cup football? I know that a lot of the celebrations were kind of based around Phil's memory and things like that. It was, for all the football, was absolutely amazing. Some of the emotional celebrations were huge as well. They can even remember the Aberdeen game and winning 2-1 to secure third spot. The kind of thunderstorms and everything else, it just all felt quite... I'm trying to find the word there, but you know what I mean. It was kind of all the circumstances just felt.
I think that was definitely a driving factor. It was like you said, we were in the mix anyway, but that just gave us an extra little determination to go and do something, and all the hard work that we'd done so far, and that Phil had been involved in the team, because he played a major part in that team as well, and we didn't want it to go to waste, you know, and we were a good footballing side, and I think that definitely brought us together, and that just drove us on, and to sort of kind of to get over the line. You see that Aberdeen game, it was just special. It was a special, and you can see that, like you said, the reactions of the players, the reaction of the fans, and everybody around the stadium, and to sort of kind of do that for the first time. I think the club hadn't been in Europe for 14 years or something like that before, so it was a change in the whole club, and it felt like the beginning of something new and something special, and it did make it all the more special because of the circumstances that surrounded it.
The following season was a good bit more disappointing. It was more low key, certainly. Although the UEFA Cup ties against Nantes will live long in the memory. The away leg, despite not managing a goal, the penalty save from Buzz, and the celebrations that followed that were pretty much like scoring a goal, to be perfectly honest. I think over the two legs, possibly came up against a team that were just that bit better and that bit more experienced in these occasions.
Yeah, well, if you look back in it, the away draw was unbelievable, you know, because they controlled the game. We never really had too many chances, but neither did they. They never had a couple of opportunities, but we played it. The manager said that I didn't play. I didn't figure in that game. He brought me, and I think it was, I don't think Chris Porter played either, if I can remember rightly, or somebody, was either him or Clarke, and he says, listen, we're just going to play, and obviously using his experience from his playing career and nights in Europe, and we're going to play, and we're just trying not to get beat, and we set up well, and the boys done a fantastic job, and that save from Buzz was fantastic, and he made another one, tipping another one over the bar as well, which I can remember was unbelievable. And again, that's what the fans remember. The fans want these nights and these trips away, and you always remember these when you spend time in a city, in a square, and all the away fans come together and they're singing songs and they walk towards the stadium. Because I can remember the bus we come through, the bus took us through, and it was brilliant. And I'm sure. And then the thing is, Motherwell over the next a few years after that, I've had some have had many a European trip abroad. So they've been lucky and blessed that way. But again, unfortunate not to kick on and push into the qualifying rounds like an Aberdeen done and get those glamour ties against the big clubs like the Bayern Munich, because these opportunities only come around once in a while. So I don't think the club just need to have that little bit of experience and know-how and just probably quality of player to get over the line and get into those qualifying games. But like I said, those games were great. And in the second leg, I think they were beaten by the better team, and that's where it was that season.
Would you say that, like, you were talking about the qualifying for European football just now, you look at, like, said Motherwell playing Krasnodar of Russia and a variety of other games, actually, even the ties in Iceland, the clubs are actually making losses quite often from qualifying for Europe. St Johnstone have had some hellish ties over the last couple of years. Is a wee bit of the glamour been taken out of qualifying for Europe because of that? There's so many qualifiers for the Scottish teams to make it to the big money rounds, so to speak.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, it doesn't make sense. You're qualifying for Europe, but you're losing money along the way. And it's the same over here in Australia. When the Aussie teams are playing the Asian Champions League, because of the travel and etc., they're losing money. So you know, but yeah, I think there's probably too many teams that qualify for Europe now. So it does take the glamour away. You know, there's, like you said, there's countries who have got 3, 4, 5 participants in each competition. So again, you get an opportunity to miss those qualifying rounds if the likes of Celtic and Rangers, and obviously Rangers been out the Premier League the last few years, has took a bit of dunt, and they can't play and win games for the other Scottish teams to miss those qualifying rounds as well. So yeah, it's difficult, but again, everyone's got to do it. So I think Scottish teams have to look at the preparation for that, and if they are playing in Europe, you know, and that's where the whole summer football debate comes back into it, and you know, it keeps popping up, and is it going to at some point say this is going to be the way ahead? Because if you look at the Irish teams who are by no stretch of imagination better than the Scottish teams, but a few of those teams over the last maybe 4 or 5 years have done very well. So there's something you need to look at in the model that will help the Scottish teams go and do well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that we spend that much time comparing ourselves to the English Premier League and perhaps bemoaning the television deals that they have and how insignificant our deals are in comparison, when actually quite often the standard of our game is pretty good, but we're so keen to belittle it on regular occasions. I don't think moving out of the traditional time frame of a season would be a bad idea at all, particularly for the pitches and the crowds as well. Difficult trips to Ross County and Inverness midweek. We had both Motherwell last season, Inverness a couple of days after Christmas away, Ross County on a Tuesday night, Aberdeen on a Tuesday night, and the lights went off and had to go up there again.
From obviously we're comparing absolute night and day here, but I know Scottish football and there's been a problem of getting the fans through the gates over the last few years, and you know, you want to make it a family day out, you want to make it an event where everyone comes, and but the conditions and the climate don't allow it, you know. So when I've played in Perth, and we're absolutely spoiled, and we play, to be sure, we take it to the extreme, because we play in the height of summer. So some of the games you're playing like 30s degrees sometimes, and that gets a bit extreme. But you know, a lot of the games are when it's 23, 24, 25 degrees, and it's such a brilliant atmosphere, and that's when we get the big crowds where, you know, the climate's better. You know, if you looked at a different model and changed it, it would entice more people to come to the games. And if you're enticing more people to come to the games, you're getting more money through to bring better players in and more money for the business. And again, you're then competing in, or you're prepared to compete in these European stages. So yeah, there's a lot to think about. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of cons as well regarding that, but why not, and try something different? You know, it's a good league, there's some good players. I just think we need to do something potentially just a little bit different.
I think that's such a kind of intelligent way of looking at it as well. You look at the Sky schedule for this afternoon, and when you're starved of football, you can't find anything on though. So I suppose that's another factor to it, that you could actually have a TV deal through these summer months where people would be more inclined to actually watch Scottish football, because quite frankly, every two summers there's nothing else on. So again, it would maybe just put it in a bigger pedestal to, and Sky would maybe, rather than making up transfers and discussing deals over and over again in Sky Sports News.
Yeah, no, definitely. And push, you know what I mean? If and again, like you said, that happens, you know, you get more money to market the game better, you know, and you make it a big deal, and that's one thing they do over here in Australia. I mean, the football's good, but they market the game so well. You know, every game's televised. Whether that could happen back into Scotland, it's a different scenario, but they market the game so well that you get a brilliant panel and the graphics and the visualisation from the TV is fantastic, you know. So they do really make their game appealing to an audience. And why can't we do it? Like you mentioned earlier, we always sort of belittle our game, but let's push it out there and let them know it's a good league, and it's, or good leagues, and it's we've got some good players, and it's a good showcase.
Just going back to that final season under Mark McGee, there was a few occasions where, whether it be the Scotland job, the Celtic job, came up, and his head certainly seemed to be turned. Are these circumstances where the players begin to feel a wee bit unsettled as well, just because there's a bit of uncertainty over what the manager's doing or where he'll end up?
Yeah, no, I think... You don't think it would affect you, but I can remember thinking back, just because of that, because I got on well with Mark McGee, and he liked me as a player, and he, you know, I was a sort of kind of mainstay in his team, and you know, if he leaves, you're thinking, like, what's going to happen, who's going to come in? There's like you mentioned before, then the new manager comes in, you've got to go again and impress and try, which is football. But you know, if you're going through a period where, all right, we're doing okay at that point, and nothing spectacular like the season before. But he's, I think it did have an effect on the players. There's no doubt about that. But like I said, if you're successful, that brings some situations where managers are going to be touted for jobs, and there's going to be players leaving because their value's went up, their stock value has been up, and clubs will come in and take your good players. So there was, you know, we had several players who'd left that season as well. And like Jim Parson obviously left the season before, and like Ross McCormick, and I think Paul Quinn had left. And so there's a few players that had left, and that's obviously because of the success of the team. And like I said, the stock of the individual rises, and these things happen. And good teams bring in, replace those players who have left. Did we do that? I'm not sure, but I think those times were a little bit unsettling, as you mentioned.
Inevitably, though, the team did have enough quality to ensure their Premier League status. It was looking a bit precarious at New Year, Christmas time, but the results following that improved enough to not manage to finish in the top six this time, but certainly secure Premier League safety. Mark McGee would move on to Aberdeen in the summer, and Jim Gannon came in. This is, we've had previous podcasts with Keith Lansley.
Why are you laughing? You're laughing already here.
it's very difficult not to. The stories in the past have been pretty good here, but that's a prime example of a manager coming in and having his own ideas and own objectives, and quite simply, it seemed to badly unsettle the place. Guys like yourselves, Keith Lasley, Stephen Hamill, Stephen Cragan, all coincidentally now involved in coaching, it must be said. That's quite an interesting one.
We've learned how not to do it.
It's fair to say for you guys, and don't get me wrong, I think that a lot of Motherwell fans would look back in Jim Gannon's time and think he brought in some good players, some not so good players as well. But and I mean, in the whole, there was quite a lot of players came in and were quite exciting for a stage. But it was very evident that off the field things weren't quite right, and guys like yourself found yourself completely frozen out. Must have been an incredibly difficult time, particularly given that, you, as you said, you were a mainstay under Mark McGee, under Morris. You played the majority of the time under Terry as well. So to find yourself just completely frozen out after these two games against Clonakilty, it must have been very disappointing.
Yeah, well, I think you know, you mentioned the four players there, and I think he had an idea in his head that he wanted to change the sort of kind of, and at that time none of us were pretty old. We were only in our late 20s, you know. Maybe Craggs had touched 30, but myself and Laz and Hammy were only late 20s, and I think he had something in his head. He wanted to make us a really young team, and a lot, I think, his mind was made up before even he entered the place. I think he'd done a lot of, he watched obviously a lot of videos. He belittled, right away he belittled the way we played before, which I don't think was the right way to go about getting the players on board. And as you mentioned, the players he did bring in, the likes of Chris Humphries and Giles Coke, who else? Big John Ruddy, what a goalkeeper. Like, he brought in, he'd done that, bringing in some good players. And to be honest, the team of at Lyle were playing some good, exciting stuff. And I think I've stated before that he was a good coach. On field, he was a good coach. And I liked his training. And there was no problem. But just the initial of isolating the players that you mentioned and it got to a stage where the other lads sort of kind of kept their mouth shut, and I sort of kind of rebelled a little bit, just because. And I'm not like that, because all I wanted for the guy to tell me maybe that he didn't want me or I wasn't good enough, or but at not one time did he tell me where I stood. I went to see him on a couple of occasions. He never said too much. I think at one point he then started to bring in a notice who's training where, and a couple of their names were training with the youth team, which I just found, if he wanted us out, he could come and speak to me face to face. So we, every morning the boys would weigh in the dressing room and see what sheet they were on, and I think at that point, I think it came to a point where it was just me. I think so it was evident he didn't want us at the club, and that's where I sort of kind of started to look elsewhere round about October time. Then I never played too many games, and even the likes of, God, I could tell you a few stories that coming back from training, the one time he used to run from the stadium up to
Deal Park,
the training ground up at Deal Park, and so on the way back one day the minibus was going back and the boys were all sitting with water. And for some reason, I think it was Giles Coke and a couple of the boys on the way by threw water over him. Because again, these guys, we all bonded. It wasn't if it was Jim Gannon's boys and the old regime. It was the guys he brought in were good guys, good players. We all got on. But I think they took a disliking to him as well. But obviously they liked him for the fact that we're playing. And I think it was Giles Coke who threw water over him. So there was a big meeting when we got back. Peter Ward came in and pulled a couple of boys away. And in fact, I think it was Giles Coke, he pulled him away and said to him, if it was, let me know. You need to let me know if it was, a Craigan or it was a Craigan or McGarry, because I'll basically sort them out. Or so I think he was looking for an excuse. He was looking for an excuse, but I don't know. He basically said, oh, I don't know who it was. But I think, and he came back in the dressing room and told the boys, he was asking if it was any, if it was used to. So I think these little things, I think it would just have been better. He could have managed it better. He didn't manage people well. He didn't address things well. He was causing mayhem around the club. I don't think a lot of people around the club had respect for him. Whether that be the girls in the office or elsewhere. I think he was causing mayhem with the SFA, writing letters about the team being cheated and all sorts. So I think he dug his own grave, and it could have been also different, you know what I mean? Because the team actually, he wasn't a bad coach, and but the question is, like, what happened to him? You know, why is he not in a job now? I think maybe similar circumstances have happened elsewhere after that as well. So, you know, it's a shame because I love my time at the club, and it was a period where I was, like you mentioned, in the team, and then totally found myself isolated, which happens in football. But again, it sort of kind of opened the door to different opportunities, and the Perth Glory opportunity arose around November, and they were interested. And basically, I sort of kind of kept my head down and worked hard, whether if it was training with the first team or the youth team. And that was the plan that was coming across Australia in January. And then he got the sack. Craig and Archie come in. Craig Brown and Archie Knox come in. And back training with the first team, they wanted me to continue. They basically said, we want you to stay. We want you to stay, and I think I was involved in their first game back. I think it was their first game. They took over the club. It was Hearts away, yeah. And I was brought back into the squad for the first time, probably in a long time. But at that point, I sort of kind of made my mind up, and I sort of kind of agreed to come over to Perth Glory.
I was just actually thinking when you were talking about Gannon causing havoc. I remember a time where he didn't do an interview with Sky until, and said he would continue not to speak to Sky until they fixed his dish.
I remember that. I think that was in the back pages or one of the pages of the record of the Sun. He like I said, he dug his own grave. You know, the disrespect, take me out of the equation, but the guys who had been around the club for a long time, Lasley and Craggs, and the experience these guys had, and Hamo, and to treat those guys like that was bang out of order, you know. So when we found out that he'd been sacked, we were coming back from training in the minibus. I think we had on the radio, or somebody got a phone call, and there was TV cameras waiting back at the club. So when we left the L on the way back, the bus was absolutely bouncing and going up, mental people hanging out the window and all sorts. And then as we drove back into Firth Park, everyone, right, sit down, sit, because all the cameras were there. So it went from our absolute party bus to everyone came out the bus straight-faced and looking pretty serious when all the cameras were on us as we left the bus. So, it was some crazy times, and there's probably another 10 to 15 stories I could tell you, but yeah, that's just, it's the way football goes. But it was a blessing in disguise, because I ended up at Perth Glory, and from that point it's opened up so many more opportunities.
Well, that's it. We'll maybe do a separate podcast where you do your Jim Gannon memoirs, but it's quite incredible to think that guys like Keith Lasley, Stephen Hamill, Stephen Craigan could have all left the club. Hamill, Lasley, Craigan all went on to have testimonials for the club. They could have been denied that through a crazy 6 months, which is quite sad to kind of consider, and quite a relief, I suppose, that three guys that are absolutely club legends are still at the club, because they managed to override that crazy time.
Yeah, it's a big sliding doors moment in it, how what could have happened. And I think thankfully for the club, ultimately it was the best thing they could ever done, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about leaving for Perth in 2010. Could you have believed at that point that 7 years later you'd be sitting talking and still involved in Australian football?
No, definitely not. Because the plan was to come over and experience something new and try something different. And I remember when I spoke to Leanne Dempster, you know, she said, you know, you've got a situation now where, because I'd dealt with her before when Jim Gannon was there, and it was spoke about that I think I'll be moving on when the transfer window opens in January. And then obviously Craig and Archer came in, and she said, listen, the guys want you to stay, so it's up to you. But she's like, listen, Scottish players don't travel, they don't go and try things. If there's an opportunity to go and try something, why wouldn't you? And it's something totally different. And I think that's where I came. I'd been playing Scottish football all my life, and it was a gamble, but just, yeah, why, it was a why not. And like I said, it was probably the best footballing decision I'd made.
You've now moved into the coaching side, and so recently we're doing your A licence course back in Scotland. How much have you enjoyed that transition? And I know that it obviously gets to a stage where playing career isn't going to last forever, and you've got to make plans going forward. Has the coaching side always been something that appealed?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think I watched Lazzy's interview on the Motherwell TV a few days back, and the two of us done the B licence together. So, like you said, that was 10 years ago. You sort of kind of plan, and you know, a lot of footballers leave it last minute. But yeah, we sort of kind of a plan in place, and we done that together. Obviously, me moving across here, I had to sort of kind of establish myself over here, and I ended up playing over 100 games for the club and done reasonably well. And when I stopped playing when I was 35, they offered me a coaching community role, which I loved. It was really good. I coached the under 20s and the NYL, which is the National Youth League, and the NPL, the National Premier League. So you play all the best kids for glory and against the best state teams, and then you go and play against all the, and then in sort of kind of the off season you go and play in a mini league against all the A league teams. So that was brilliant. I loved that. I loved the travelling aspect as well, because I've done that as a player and I continue to do that as a coach. And that was great. The club a couple of years back was involved in a salary cap breach. All the clubs here worked with on a salary cap of, I think it's $2.5 million. The club are found that they were overspending or misused that, and there was a lot of ramifications. Some people lost their job, and I lost my job. Within that, I managed to secure some coaching for a year, and continue to play. And now basically since last year, I started up my own academy, and that's been going reasonably well. With sort of kind of the view of creating an environment where all the best young kids are out with, because WA, we've only got one professional club here, so trying to create a environment for all the best, the rest, where they come together and get that extra training and contact, and then also on top of that, to create opportunities for them. Within Australia and also abroad as well. So when I was back doing the A-licence, I managed to catch up with a few people, and Alan Burrows was one of them. So hopefully there'll be something maybe down the line we can have some sort of partnership and along with a few other clubs. So that's getting put in place, and on top of that, I'm still playing or still trying to play for ECU Joondalup in the WA National Premier League. So I'm enjoying that along with the first team kind of assistant coaching role, which is really good. And it's something that I'll definitely want to pursue. That's something where I feel I enjoy and something I could give value to moving forward. So no, I really love the coaching part of it. And the senior stuff at the sort of kind of high end of the NPL is like a second tier part. It's like a part time team. You know, the lads we train twice a week in the game the weekend. So it's of a reasonable standard. There's a lot of players who have left ECU actually to go overseas and play in England. The likes of Chris Heard and Aaron Williams and Reece Williams. So a lot of players have left here, and a couple lately have went and played A-League over with Sydney FC with Brandon O'Neill. So some of the names you probably know and don't know. But it's a fantastic setup the club's got. They've got a brilliant academy, a junior academy. The senior team, we finished the highest, we were 2 points off the league, in the highest position the club have finished in 17 years. So everything's going well and moving well, and I'm pretty content and happy at the moment. And like you mentioned, I was overdoing their license, and it was good to catch up with a few familiar faces as well. And just taking those next steps to get the right qualifications to what I sort of kind of want to move on to.
It must be handy then that you do keep in contact with a lot of your former teammates. When you look at Motherwell just now, Keith Lasley just taking on the assistant manager's position, Stevie Hamill's well involved with the 20s coaching, as is Stephen Craig, and has achieved a lot of success there. The Youth Cup win, I suppose it takes all these years of supporting a so-called lesser side. The night at Hampden where the under-20s won the Youth Cup was one of my favourite memories in recent times supporting Motherwell. It was great. It's so many good young players clearly coming through, and it was a great performance. They won 5-2 in the night. But these guys are obviously very passionate about their football and passionate about their career beyond football as well. So
I think passionate about the club as well. I think that's where the club and the likes of Alan Burrows and the other guys who make those big decisions. You need these guys who have been a mainstay of the club. They're like Sir Lasley and Craigans and Hamels. These guys know what it means to play for Motherwell. These guys have got the experience and the know-how, and kids are inspired when these guys are around. You know, so I think the model the club have got is fantastic, and it's just good to see so many of these players and ex-players still involved, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you say it was always the case when you were playing with guys like Laz and Hamill that you could see that they had it in them to go on and be coaches and hopefully be successful coaches at that?
I think it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell who would make a coach, and you know who has got the personality. Everyone's got a different skill set, but you know, and I think it's only time will tell. Sometimes you think, oh, he would make a really good manager, but there's so different facets and to being a manager. You know, the man management skills, the football knowledge, the tacticians, and getting the right people in to support the sports science, getting the right physios in, recruiting well. So there's so many different aspects of being a good manager, and getting all these aspects correct. It's so difficult to say. But from talking about these three guys in particular, you've got to say that they've got a good start. They know the game. They're intelligent. Again, many conversations, talking football and tactics as such. Actually, when I was back, I caught up with Laz, and he was showing me all his pro license stuff, and he seemed pretty pleased with that, and he was excited of what the future holds. And you could tell by that, like I mentioned, the interview I watched, he was bursting with pride, and he was excited of what's to come. I think the Colin made a to get these sort of guys in is the right way to go ahead for me.
And I suppose, like yourself, you'll have a decent idea of what was a good manager and what was a not-so-good manager as well, eh?
Well, you know, all the players, you think, well, the good thing is we've probably worked under so many managers, so that's what you do. You take the good things. You think, how would I like to be treated as a player? What kind of training would I like? What type of player would I want in my team? You know, so you take all these things, you take all the good things from the good managers, and you think, well, what did he do that I didn't like doing, like a Jim Gannon? I think that's me getting another dig in there. So it's how you remember all the good things, and yeah, but you've got to have your own spin, you've got to be your own personality, you've got to have your own way of doing things as well. You can't just be a copycat of somebody. You've got to have your own way of doing things and your own ideas. But it definitely is. You would take things and how, and I do that with the coaching I do. At the moment, you use all the experiences that you've had and put it in a good and positive way.
Just looking at the current setup at Motherwell, obviously Mark McGee returned to the club last season or two seasons ago. His first half season back, he transformed the club again, to be perfectly honest. A team that was struggling right down at the bottom of the table ended up finishing the season in fifth place. A real success, perhaps. The circumstances that he left in meant that he wasn't welcomed back by the supporters with open arms. In fact, far from it, to be perfectly honest. There was a lot of resentment there. Personally, I was pleased with the job that he did when he came back in, so that kind of overrides any personal feelings you've got towards him. It's not as if I'm going out for pints with him after the games anyway, to be perfectly honest. It's,
he likes a pint as well. You'll see him down Byers Lane, that's for sure.
The next season, it was a bit of a kind of public fall from grace, really. The results weren't good. Some of the press, although I do argue that if you're in the heat of a game and your team are getting beaten quite embarrassingly, to be sent to the stand and then have an idiot flash their phone in your face to record and film you and abuse you, seems to be, I would say that's kind of possibly fair game for being scalped for that, but it was obviously played out in public in the results from the 7-2 against Aberdeen and the 5-1 home game against Dundee. The writing was on the wall, but for someone like yourself who enjoyed some really good times playing under Mark McGee, you must have been disappointed to see it not work out in the second time.
Yeah, definitely, and I was keeping a close eye on things, and even though I'm living the other end of the world with social media these days, you get everything instantly, so I've seen all that getting played out, I've seen the video. You know, 10 years ago, if a manager got sent to stand, I'm sure that would have happened then as well, except without the video camera, so everything's sort of kind of, you're under the microscope, and he was again, the results weren't great, and I know that the team weren't doing great, but I thought he probably could have had gave him a little bit more time, and speaking for the guys within the camp, I think they definitely had the back, they were backing him, and they were wanting to do well. You know, sometimes players, you know, I'm not saying subconsciously, you want them out, but I'm sure from what I heard the team are backing them. So I think it'd be a scenario where they probably felt they let them down as well. But I still thought there was still time and still playing enough time in the season for me to turn it around. So yeah, it was disappointing for me to go. But these things happen. I think, as you mentioned, the fans didn't probably, when he came back, accept him with open arms, which is understandable to an extent, but I still think no matter how well it went, he was never going to be accepted in some areas of the support. But it was disappointing, definitely, to see him go.
Stephen Robinson's taken over, and particularly during the summer, there's been a great deal of overhaul at the club, a lot of departures. already six new faces in through the door, and the kind of model of signing players from the lower leagues in England and hoping to sell them on is something that's worked fairly well at Motherwell in recent times. And I'm sure that the likes of Alan Burrows and the football club as a whole will be hoping that they can replicate those successes, and as well as achieving success with these guys playing for the team, inevitably move them on at a later date for a significant fee.
Yeah, well, the club don't have the budget to probably have a different model. So I think, like you said, that it's worked in recent times and getting these players who have come up, and you're getting some good players that are coming up and making a name for themselves, and then potentially going back down south and getting themselves a bigger move. So they're under they get more exposure in Scotland, and also the under 20 team who won the cup as well. So there'll be some real good young players coming through, and speaking to Laz, he mentioned that there's some fantastic young players coming through. So I think Steve Robinson's come in and he's brought all these new faces in, and the fans will be, I think they'll be pretty excited. A bit of freshness to the club again, and bringing six new signings and potentially adding a couple of younger players in, and I think it's exciting. I don't see any reason why they can't have a reasonable season.
And I suppose personally speaking as well, you'll be hoping to, after seeing St Mirren stay up last season, Motherwell staying up, it was looking for a case that we might even miss each other over the, if Motherwell were to go down, and it looked like for a stage St Mirren were going to go down as well, but Jack Ross performed a tremendous job in turning the fortunes round there. You'll be hoping that it's a bit of an upward trajectory for St Mirren now as well, given that as a club that I feel that are very much similar in stature to Motherwell, and it would have been a real shame to see them drop down into the third tier of Scottish football.
Yeah, well, listen, it was for a long time, I think a lot of people thought they were gone, and come January time, it looked not pretty, but very, very bleak. But like you said, Jack Ross just come in and done an absolutely fantastic job. He took a massive gamble. I'm sure, and many of them are calculated gambles, because he's done his due diligence and he's done his utmost to find out who he's bringing in and what he's bringing in. But he got the right players in and the right players out, and they managed to go on a fantastic run, and somehow it was a miracle how they stayed up. And hopefully, like you mentioned, you know, they can get back to where St Mirren fans at least think they belong, and that's back in the Premier League. So the first division is always a tough gig. It's a tough league with some very good teams. So it'll be tough again this year. But hopefully they can get themselves back in the Premier League, and that's the sort of games that I always like to see. Obviously, Man and Mark, the three ex-teams, St Mirren, Motherwell and Ross County, all doing well. So it'd be good for the buddies to get back up there and get in amongst it again.
Yeah, I'll be absolutely fine with that as well, as long as there's a Stephen McGarry to score a winner and then kiss the badge afterwards. That's absolutely fine.
That, I definitely didn't kiss the badge. It'll get me hung. When I go back to Paisley, I get hammered for it.
Stephen, thanks very much for your time. Well, it's for you, it's the evening, and for me, it's early afternoon, but it's been much appreciated and a very interesting listen. Thanks very much.
No, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Like you said, it is now just after 8. I'm just off to my bed, a wee cup of tea and a chocolate biscuit, because I've got an early start in the morning. But thanks very much for having me on, mate.
No, it's been a pleasure, and all the best for the future in Australia and beyond, mate. Take care.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back a week on Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Sex Friday.